You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
We are back, Colt Molesky, Trey Flynn, as always, bringing you daily Timberwolves content. And today we're going to be talking about a Timberwolves victory, three-game win streak, and the Utah Jazz. And you know what? I've got some hot takes on the Utah Jazz. I'll stash those for later on, Trey. Right now, let's talk about a 120-105 victory over the Los Angeles Lakers. And you know what? It wasn't really pretty, but the Timberwolves did enough to win in this one. You had Wiggins with 23 points. You had Towns with 27. Bayless with 16 off the bench. Again, maybe not the guys you expected to play really well, or maybe not the best game, but they got a W.
Yeah, dude, three-game win streak. I mean, I'm pretty happy right now. I'm actually ecstatic. We're only two games back now from the eighth seed, which is fantastic. And this Lakers team really needed a W without LeBron. So they were actually trying out. They're putting out all stops. And like you said before the pod, you said it was a messy game. It definitely was a messy game. And, you know, the guys they had to really stop in this game and focus on stopping had to be Kyle Kuzma. And they did a great job of that. I really thought they had to hone in on him and, you know, minimize as many shots he could take. Because he's a high-volume shooter, and when he gets going, he's pretty hot. And he was only 4 of 12 in this game, and I thought that was key. But, dude, Jared Bayless coming off the bench and getting some key minutes for Derrick Rose, getting that last second shot going in the second half. You know, head coach Ryan Saunders made the decision to keep Rose on the bench in the second half and give Bayless the, you know, the bulk of the minutes. What did you think about that with Bayless in the second half?
I thought it was really interesting that it's almost like the spots are there. You can fight for the spots, and at the same time, you have Dario Saric playing like a lot of minutes with Luol Deng. Like, isn't that weird? Like you have in one corner, Bayless is able to. I know that there's injuries at point guard, but Bayless is able to work his way into a pretty decent amount of minutes with the starters, and in the same game, Dario Saric is playing a ton of minutes with Jared Terrell and Luol Deng. It just seems strange that it seems like these positions or these minutes are almost up for the taking, but also Dario Saric can't get away from the second or even third unit.
Yeah, I mean, he played a lot with Luol Deng, Gorgui Jang, Jared Terrell. And, you know, surprisingly, Anthony Tolliver didn't get many minutes in this game. So I kind of like that diversity and the differentiation of minutes here from Coach Saunders. But, you know, again, I don't appreciate the way that Dario Saric is being used. I think that's my guy moving forward. I'm just going to go on the Saric train. I think he's just not being used correctly. I think it's pretty obvious, too. Like, I don't think Thibodeau knew exactly how to use him. That's fine. Like, you're not really supposed to figure out how to use players you trade for mid-season. Like, that's a really hefty job. And Robert Covington fits so seamlessly, so I can't really compare the two. So Dario's just going to take a little bit longer. But, you know, I understand keeping Luol Deng in there and Jared Terrell in there for like 10 minutes in this game, each of them, because they're playing pretty well. Like Jared Terrell, shout out to him for getting some key shots in there. He was 2 of 3 from the 3-point line, hit a nice one in the second half. He had 10 points. And Luol Deng, just, you know, doing his normal production that he's had when he plays more than 10 minutes, he was 3 of 4 for 7 points. So I'll take that off the bench any day. And just honestly, Colin, it's just nice to see minutes spread across the board, because if this was a Tom Thibodeau lineup, we might just see the same 8 or 9 guys, or, you know, at times even 7 or 8 guys get the, you know, the hefty minutes, and it would be a tough game down the stretch because our guys would get really tired in the fourth. But I also like how much confidence Saunders is putting in Josh Okogie. I know I've said to take some minutes away from him, maybe give him Saric, but he put 39 minutes on Okogie's plate, and that's a lot. You know, I know that's obviously because of the Tyus Jones, Jeff Teague injury. But 39 minutes is a lot for a rookie when it's the most on the team, when you're having more minutes than 2 former number one picks in Wiggins and Towns. And he took 14 shots and 7 threes, which sounds great because you want your rookie to do that, who's only a defensive player, who doesn't play that well in offense. But he was 2 of 14, 0 for 7 from 3. And these are just the type of games that you're going to kind of have to use as an outlier offensively for Josh Okogie, because the best thing you can see from a 20-year-old such as himself, who's such a defensive player like Andre Roberson, is that he's just shooting at a high volume just to get more confident. and this is almost like practice for him, these kind of games, unfortunately. It's just, it is what it is as a rookie. So I do respect that about Saunders, giving him a high bulk of minutes here.
I do as well. I do need to see more from Okogie, though. Like, I know that they told him going into the season, you're focusing on the defensive stuff. You've got to work on defense, and you've got, that's how you're going to get minutes on this team, and the offensive stuff will come. That said, I do need to see a progression of, like, all right, this is where you started, and now this is where you've grown, as especially a three-point shooter, because I tell you what, he, every game, he's getting at least four really good looks that where there's not really a defender super close, and he's just not sinking them consistently. And so I need, I mean, I don't know, what you lock yourself into a gym or something, I don't know, but I need to see him get better when he's getting a bunch of really good looks that he is breaking a lot of the time still.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because his job at Georgia Tech, and Minnesota's front office must have known this going into the draft, but his majority of his job at Georgia Tech was to play crazy athletic, driving to the basket, offensive ball, and then on defense, he would guard the best player every single game, and that was just his job. So he would put a lot of his effort on the defensive end, and now Minnesota's asking him to do kind of the opposite here, like midseason, like they, or I guess now we're past that point, but the beginning of the season, they really want him to focus on defense when he got his minutes, and he was playing some crazy good, like Jimmy Butler-esque fourth quarter gritty basketball on the defensive end, where he would get some really key steals and then go in transition and make some nice plays. And now, like you're saying, you're totally right, he has open uncontested shots he's just missing. And honestly, his shot looks a little bit broken. I don't want to, you know, hone in on that too much, but it just looks kind of like Fultz-ish, Marco Fultz. And I don't want to compare the two, but like it just looks a little whack. I don't know. It's like a weird bend at the elbow when he's going up to shoot it, and it's like a line drive at times. And then he'll switch it up and he'll get like a huge high depth shot, and it just doesn't make much sense. And when they're all uncontested, for them to look that different. So, yeah, maybe you're right. Lock himself in the gym for some minutes. Or they just get a good training coach with him, kind of like what they did with Wiggins this past 2 years, who's gotten a lot better at his three-point shot. So I'm sure Minnesota can fix it. I guess at the end of the day, we're talking about a rookie, and he's going to get better. But you're totally right. To get these minutes, we got to believe in Okogie more. And, again, I would like to see these minutes more differentiated to Dario Saric. So.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. If he can grow, I think that'll be – huge down the run that the Timberwolves have here, because if he can grow as a shooter even a little bit to finish out this season, I think that'll make a world of difference. Also, Jared Terrell, my boy, I've talked about him a ton. 10 points in 9 minutes. Love it. I love him. I'm excited. I predicted like it would take him like a year and a half to really make some meaningful minutes happen on this Timberwolves roster. But hey, you know what? I mean, if he continues to do with what he's doing with little minutes and go 2 of 3 in under 10 minutes from 3-point range, I don't know. Maybe he could see a little more times on the floor consistently. I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting too excited after he saw a little bit of time. But I really love him and the 3-point shooting that he brings, and I think he's a great. I think he potentially could be the 3-and-D player that they need next year.
I like it, Jared Terrell. Let's get him some more minutes, and that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Like, if we're gonna throw Okogie that many minutes and not differentiate them to other players and have a more diverse lineup, then just focus on Okogie's shot. But I really want to see other guys get minutes, whether it's Kidabis, Diop, Jared Terrell, whomever. I mean, obviously, I want Dario Saric to get the minutes. But, like, you just got to switch it up, man. And also, like, I don't want to keep honing on Saric, but I just feel kind of passionate at this in the moment, Colton. I'm in the moment. I got my black tee right here, so I'm going to go into it for a second.
I love it.
So, Dario Saric, his usage is the lowest on the team for players playing over 20 minutes a game. He is the second lowest usage on the team. He has a 12.1% from usage rate, which is one of the lowest rates for any player that plays over 20 minutes in the NBA. He's bottom 10. He doesn't get used when he's on the court because I don't think they quite know how to use them, because they don't really play a really great stretch four lineup unless Tolliver's on the floor. And they've even moved Saric to 5 a lot and play Tolliver at the 4. And that's just not Sarge's basketball. That's not the type of basketball he likes to play. Even Philadelphia, they would switch between who was it last year? Ersan Ilyasova and him between the 3 and 4 and just mix it up with Joel Embiid at the 5. And Sarge was able to facilitate that position and run around and screen for his backcourt. And it just looked a lot better and more fluid. They got to watch some Philly tape in the past 2 years, because the way that he was utilized in Philadelphia, he was a game changer for them a lot down the stretch. And he was a reason that they even beat they destroyed the Miami Heat in the first round. They still stuck it out in the second round pretty well, too. And if you're going to not use a guy like that who was almost potentially rookie of the year, you're just wasting your time with a good, talented player that's on a rookie contract, mind you. So he's going to get a contract fairly soon. So I just feel like they have to work with him more. And not only that, if he's willing to be one of the lowest usage players in the league, that means he must just be a good guy. So you want to keep those kind of guys around. And like we said in the past pod, he's one of the top 5 players on this team, whether he's 4 or 5 with Tyus Jones. That's an argument to be had there. But I just think he's too solid to keep on the bench for this long. And I do agree with you, Jared Terrell minutes, but I really think Saunders has got to make a decision to somehow either cut some of Taj and cut some of Okogie, but get Sarge 26, 28 minutes a game and not these 20 minutes a game that he has.
Yes. Yeah, something must be done. And it'll be interesting, too, to see how he's able to try and grow in this role to maybe try and justify that. Because, again, 20 minutes, I know he wasn't playing. Again, this was a really sloppy game. The Timberwolves had 12 turnovers. The Lakers had 19. This was a sloppy game, and they really had to work to stay in it for 2.5 quarters, I would say, almost 3 quarters. And he only had 2 shots in that 20 minutes. I mean, I did not know what was going on sometimes, especially with that second unit. It was all over the place, but we'll see if he can build consistency. We're going to talk about Derrick Rose here in a second, but first let's take a break for some sponsors. All right, briefly, Trey, before we go to the Utah Jazz here, Derrick Rose did not come back. He suffered an injury last night. Have you seen anything yet on his status for the Utah Jazz?
I'm not hearing great things that he's going to be playing. I mean, he's questionable with a sore right ankle. Personally, Colin, with the way Jared Bayless is playing and this, you know, high volume shooter and pretty consistent facilitator now that he is, I don't mind Jared Bayless getting the bulk of the minutes in this next game. And obviously Josh Kogi's probably going to play another close to 40-minute game. But I really think we need Derrick Rose in that home game against the Jazz, the second game on this streak. And this away game against Utah, maybe we can sit him on the bench. And maybe he can just be a guy ready to go off the bench if need be in the second half. I don't know what your thoughts on it. I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about it, because I just think he's had so many issues with that ankle that I don't think it's necessary. And I think a good guy to point to right now, and I really hope, you know, he gets better. One of my favorite players in the league, Victor Oladipo, totally, totally sad and uncontrollable injury that he has, terrible. But it was the same knee that Victor Oladipo's been, resting all season long, where he's been off and on the court. And that just happens with a lot of NBA players who tend to try to push it a little bit too much. And it could be pressure from the team, but usually it's the players themselves. And Derrick Rose is one of those guys who's going to force his way out on the court. And it might just be a more mature move from Saunders to just kind of place him on the bench for this next game.
Yeah, I'd rather lose him for a game or two now than for the last month of the season. That's 100% for sure. So just rest him up. Make sure you're not pushing it. It is a real bummer when you do have one position group that really gets the injury bug, as opposed to just a team in general, because it's a lot harder to combat. But that's unfortunate what's happened for the Timberwolves with Tyus Jones, Jeff Teague, and Derrick Rose all getting a bit of the injury bug lately. And so it stinks. I mean, it stinks for those guys. It stinks for Derrick Rose, who's been playing so well. It stinks for the team to try and fight that. But at the end of the day, he's a really important piece of this team, and you can't risk losing him for a really long period of time. It's better to have him rest up and come back closer to 100% than try and play him against the Utah Jazz on the road. And so I totally agree with you. I'd rather see him get rest now than get injured later. And I wanted to hear your take, too, before we talk about the Jazz. Just 10 seconds on Derrick Rose not starting for the All-Star game.
Ooh, yeah, that was tough. I did like the All-Star starters, though. Like, I mean, I picked Steph and Harden. I mean, I assumed that's who it was going to go. When I did multiple voting, obviously I voted in Derrick Rose a couple times. But, like, I just assumed that people would vote in Steph. I mean, he's the guy, right? Like, that you're looking for to get out. Like, if you're going to go James Harden, Derrick Rose, I get that. Like, especially from a fan voting perspective, like, I could totally understand that. I wouldn't even been angry about it just because Steph's been hurt. But if you look at Curry's numbers, I mean, I'm a huge Curry fan, and he's one of the more underrated superstars, I think, in NBA history. And not to mention with this whole Kevin Durant fiasco, he's just going to go down as super underrated because they're going to remember him as on a Kevin Durant basketball team, which is ridiculous to me. That's another story. He's having quite possibly the best year of his career when healthy, and that's the problem. It's the one healthy stuff. But the issue is Derrick Rose hasn't been necessarily healthy either. So you can kind of compare them very linearly. So I don't want to say that Derrick Rose deserved the spot. I'm just going to stick with what the coaches and players decided with that second 50% of part of the vote that, you know, in the media too, that Steph really deserved that starting spot. And I think it's totally fine. And the fans obviously vote for Steph. They love Steph. And they vote for Derrick Rose, but he just couldn't pull out.
I would have been totally fine with Rose starting just because of the games, the amount of games that Steph has missed. I mean, Derrick Rose still has played 38 games this year, so while he's missed some games for injury, it's not been a crazy amount. Steph missed, like, what was that, a month, or maybe it was 5 weeks. So I would have been fine with him missing the start just because of injury. I don't know. I think that for a lot of these things, it's kind of like the MVP award, right, where it's a whole lot of narrative wrapped into why guys are going and why guys are starting versus why guys are on the bench. It's like 50% stats, 50% narrative. And so if you think about it that way, I mean, the story going into this year for Derrick Rose and everything that he's kind of had to push his way past in the last couple of years on the Knicks and the Cavaliers and what that has been like, and then to come out and have this type of season and to have this type of game, not only because of how he's played the last couple of years, but just how his game, he transformed it from when he was really, really good to now to be good again and what the differences are. I was fine with that narrative kind of propelling him into a starting role. That said, I know why he's on the bench.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, I think Derrick Rose has gotten like an overwhelming amount of love via NBA Twitter and media, the media frenzy that's been around Rose and players. Like, when it comes to stuff on the court, people have been very loving of Derrick Rose, even with his comments. And when he made those comments, and like, people went right back to apologizing in the microphone about him saying gay or not, like, immediately people were like apologizing and saying sorry. Like, it shows that people really respect the player that Derrick Rose is on the court, and they really want him to thrive now that he's back from injury. And he even just said the other day that he thinks he's a better player now than he was as an MVP, just because he has more of a high intellect and he knows how the game flows a little bit better. And a lot of players have said that post-injury, even though their numbers aren't as great and they can't necessarily, like, you know, dunk the ball out of the gym, but, like, they play more fluid and they have higher IQs, so I can see it from their standpoint. But, dude, it just comes down to, are we going to look back in history and look at this All-Star game and not see, you know, one of the top 10, top 15, top 20 players of all time in Steph Curry when he retires? I'm assuming he'll be up there. Not in an All-Star starting lineup. It won't be a huge deal, but I think it will be somewhat of a blemish on his career, and I guess like a little blemish, but I just think it matters. Like, I can't really see Derrick Rose necessarily deserving that spot over Curry. If it was like Lillard that we were talking about, or even Westbrook, I would just be like, yeah, give it to Derrick Rose. Like, I think it's deserving the way he's been playing this year, the amount of fans he has. He's a big part of the NBA in general, and you know, getting it so popular as it is today. But just Steph's such a tough sell.
There you have it, folks. We're going to talk about the Jazz here, but first we're going to get to another break for some sponsors. The Timberwolves do play the Utah Jazz to finish out their road trip. I know that the Jazz are a tough team at home, and they've definitely given the Timberwolves problems in the past. But we've talked about this a couple times already. I'm not 100% sold on the Jazz being good. I know they're a playoff team right now, but listen to some of these numbers. So, in assist to turnover ratio, or their assist ratio right now, excuse me, is 17.9. That's 12th in the NBA. Their assist to turnover ratio is 1.62. Both those kind of middle of the road as far as the league. Offensive rating, the Jazz are, again, middle of the pack there for teams. They're 20th, I guess even lower than middle of the pack. 20th in offensive rating, 107.7. I know that yesterday we talked about their defensive rating being 4th in the NBA. That's really the only stat that they have that's really exceptional. Because you look at a couple of stats that I just gave you, middle of the road or under the that center mark in the NBA. And then if you're looking at points per game, they're also pretty low on the list, 22nd in the NBA in points per game at 108.4. Trey, is this team good? Like, for real good?
I am actually going to say yes, Colton. I'm going to go more on our boss over there at Locked On, David Locke, loves the Utah Jazz. Big Jazz guy.
I see what you're doing.
If you haven't heard. but I'm going to go more down his route. This team is – I've watched a couple of Jazz games this year for whatever reason, and they're actually a very fluid team. They move very consistently down the floor. They have a very solid pace. They don't change up their game for any team or any well, for better or worse, they don't change it up. They kind of play through their big man and Rudy Gobert. A lot of people think they play through just Donovan Mitchell, but it's really through Gobert if they win or lose games. And they kind of proved that last season once Gobert came back and they finally made the playoffs. Like, it was because of him and what he means for that defense. He's kind of just the center point for that team. And Donovan Mitchell, like, I know I just brought up Gobert, but Donovan Mitchell, dude, like, I think I texted you this last night. Like, he's been playing insane lately. Like, in the past 12 games, they're 9-3. They were on a 6-game winning streak at one point. And Donovan Mitchell in this past 12 games where they're 9-3, he's averaging 28.3 points per game, 46.5% from the field, shooting 7.3 three-point attempts a game, 42.5% from the arc, 80% from the free throw line, 4.9 assists, 4.3 rebounds, 1.4 steals. He's been a boss, dude. And, like, ever since Ricky Rubio got back from injury, their assist-to-turnover ratio has been real up. Like, so he's been really hurt this year, and the reason why that assist-turnover ratio is so wacky is because Rubio's been hurt. And as we know as Wolves fans, like, Rubio has been really, really good this year. He brings a tear to my eye. I wish he was still on this team. He's one of my favorite players. And then Jay Crowder has been great on defense this year. Somehow he's having a revival season. And then shout-out Kyle Korver, the guy who just never ages. He's shooting 40% from three on 6 attempts for the Jazz in the past 12 games and averaging close to 11 points. And they've only lost 5 games since trading for him. They've been fantastic with him. And then somehow Joe Ingles is one of the best defenders in the league, too, from the perimeter. So who knows how this team is good. I understand just looking at them face value. Or like even on the court, watching them in a game, they seem kind of boring. But on the advanced metrics, like they aren't even standing out either. But they just know how to do it, dude. They remind me a lot of a Spurs-esque pop team where they're just going to surprise you before all those guys were Hall of Fame talents like Duncan, Parker, Ginobili, whatever. And they just look really good. I'm on the Jazz train, man. I'm kind of nervous for these two games, and they might secure a playoff spot this year and probably fairly soon. I think they have that 7th seed pretty locked up. They're tied with the 6th seed Spurs right now too. And Houston's losing games. So there's a team to watch out for that could really move their way up the ladder. So I know I said earlier in the season that if we're going to watch out for teams to follow the playoffs, I was saying to watch out for the Jazz to make in the playoffs, and they've just been so great since then. And the Clippers, the team you picked to drop out, they've been really bad since you said that. So we're both right in the sense, and I think the Clippers hopefully fall out, but if we can somehow pull out of these two Jazz wins, we'll be right there in that 8th spot. So as important as both these games are, the Jazz just look good to me, Colton, so I'm kind of nervous.
That's the thing, though, is that, I mean, if you look at month-to-month Donovan Mitchell scoring, I mean, January he has been killing it, no doubt. But December he was averaging 18.2 points per game, shooting 38% from the field. He was averaging under 5 rebounds, under 3 assists per game. I mean, the only stat that really – he was shooting 29% from the three-point range. The only stat that jumps off the page really is his 1.6 steals. I think that Donovan Mitchell is a guy who, while he's good at a few things, he's really elite as a scorer. And if he can't score consistently, then he really is detrimental to this team's production on the court. And I think that while he's had some really impressive marks, he's also had some really damaging performances for the Jazz. And you've seen moments. I mean, there were plenty of games. There's a slew of games in in October, where Donovan Mitchell was shooting really poorly, and they'd actually have to bench him for like a quarter and a half just to try and give their roster almost a readjust in a game. And that happened a couple of times. And so you see that this impact of this guy who really is mainly a scorer being their centerpiece. And I think you see maybe some of how they have some of these highs and lows. I think that you can. There are ways to, if you can scheme kind of Donovan Mitchell out of this game, then there are ways to put this offense in a big funk. Because again, while he's playing really well so far in January, if you can get him to start really bombing a lot of shots, I think that really puts the whole offense in a funk, not just himself. And so that's kind of an interesting like nugget. Or kind of an interesting, almost like kill switch for the Jazz, is that they're secretly super, super dependent on Donovan Mitchell's high production rate for them to be successful. And I know that they have guys like Gobert who have had confusing seasons this year, but are always dangerous defensively. One defensive player of the year just last year. Ricky Rubio has had good moments for the Jazz. I know that there's a loyal listener and follower on Twitter, Alan, who was pitching us a Ricky Rubio trade to get him back in Minnesota. Gosh, it is documented how much I hate Ricky Rubio, so let's stay away from that. But I know that they have weapons. And I really still feel like if you can get Donovan Mitchell off his game, it's up for the taking.
Colin, I love that you're a Ricky Rubio hater. We have to disagree on some things. It's honestly Ricky Rubio's hair that does it for me. I mean, the hair is just a selling point for me. So, you know, I'm a big hair guy. I had to make fun of Thibodeau earlier this year. So the Rubio hair sells it.
I mean, for me, it's that he's been laying enough bricks to build a house in his Timberwolves career. But that's just one man's opinion.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to stick with these Jazz highlights. I'll forget about everything else for the rest of the years. But, yeah, man, I totally agree with you. Like, Donovan Mitchell, it's almost like the Houston Rockets. Like, I mean, kind of play – think of, like, prior to what James Harden's doing right now, which we really haven't talked about at all, but James Harden's been, like, one of the best players on the planet or has been the best player on the planet for the past 2 months. But, like, prior to these past 2 months, like, James Harden and Clint Capela, the way they run that team, if you could stop Harden and force Capela to be the main offensive guy – they're going to lose. And that's kind of what Utah is too right now. They're like a watered down version of that with those two players in that respect, because I do think Utah has better players than the Houston does in general. But Mitchell and Gobert play really, really well together. And they kind of both know their role too on both ends. But the problem is if you don't stop Mitchell and you let him get going, they're pretty good to the point where I think they could battle any team besides the Warriors. And I think that was evident last game. They just beat the Denver Nuggets. They're coming off a huge win. They beat the Denver Nuggets 114-108. And they gave Nikola Jokic, and Rudy Gobert let Nikola Jokic just show him up with 28 points, 21 rebounds, and 6 assists, 2 steals, and a block. And they still beat them because their other second-leading scorer, third-leading scorer, mind you, is Paul Millsap, who was held to 1-for-8 from the field with 2 points because he's not a three-point shooter and he couldn't do anything from the perimeter. So Gobert just had everything held within the restricted zone. And Jokic was playing a lot from the mid-range in this game. So that was a big reason for that loss. And I think that that'll be something interesting going into this game, how much Taj Gibson can fight around Gobert, because Taj Gibson's known for getting his crafty, easier buckets that he kind of has to fight for himself, but they look easy on screen. And I'm not sure he'll get those against Rudy Gobert. So it'll be interesting to see if, one, we can stop Donovan Mitchell, and who can stop Donovan Mitchell, because who's it going to be? Andrew Wiggins, Josh Okogie? It'll most likely be Okogie on him a lot because he can keep up down the pace and down the floor, because we're going to need Wiggins a lot on offense. But, and then you got to look at, is Towns going to show up against Gobert, one of the best defenders in the league, or the league has seen in many years? So it'll be interesting, and I can also see Joe Ingles talking a lot of crap to Andrew Wiggins, which will be very intriguing.
I'm not even worried about it. We got Gorgie the swingman on the bench ready to come off and jumped to his defense. So I'm not even worried about it. I'm sure we're going to be talking a lot about the Jazz, both of these games happening over the weekend. And so I'm sure we're going to come back with plenty of Jazz thoughts and emotions from these games on Monday. But that's it for us headed into the weekend. Thank you everyone for tuning in and listening to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On